In today's show, I'm joined by Kevin Pelton of ESPN. We're going to talk about draft prospects for the upcoming 2020 NBA draft. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. If you want to make sure you never miss a show, subscribe. Hit the subscribe button down below. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app as well, and you'll never miss a show leading up to the NBA draft, free agency, and into fantasy drafting season. And another way to get some great info and a great community, we're over 400 members in there now, is my new fantasy basketball Discord server. You'll find the link in the description and in the show notes of the audio version of this podcast. Check that out. Also, a link to vote for this podcast for the best podcast of the year in Australia, and as well a link for some really high quality leagues, the Fantasy Basketball World Cup over at the FBI, not the actual FBI, the FBI Fantasy Basketball International, run by Brendan and Matt over there. So check that out. But today we're talking with Kevin Pelton. We're going to be talking Tyrese Haliburton, Patrick Williams, Precious Achiuwa, Devin Vassell, and a couple other blokes chucked in there as well, so we might as well get Kevin in to talk about them right now. Take two, Kevin. Welcome to the show. It's been a while since you've been on.
Entirely too long. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's we're really close here to the NBA draft, and it's good to have you on because, you know, some of the people I've spoken to, we've been talking about the NBA draft, a lot of scouting perspective. You've got a lot of draft models that you look at in terms of looking at these players. And we're going to get some different perspectives on some of these guys here, because one of the guys that you want to talk about here is a player that numerous of the other guests that I've had on have been lower on than consensus. So I'm really interested to hear your take on this guy, and that is Tyrese Haliburton, the sophomore point guard from Iowa State. His numbers and his measurables, they look pretty good. Like 6'5", great height for a point guard. The steal rate, phenomenal. Great assist numbers, high three-point percentage. He's been the number one player in terms of people who are down on him. Everyone that I've asked, that he has come up the most. Now, you are higher on him. So, sell me on Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, Zach Lowe said the other day on his draft preview podcast that Tyrese Haliburton seemed to be constructed for him to like as a player. And he definitely, you know, was built in the lab for statistical projections to be all over him. He was someone who first popped in my model as a freshman when he wasn't really, it was like someone you were watching for years down the road, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 year guy who eventually could have NBA potential. And that changed pretty rapidly. So his freshman year at Iowa State, he's playing a relatively small role in the offense. You know, they've got some veterans like Mariel Shayok that are, you know, playing a leading role. And, you know, he's basically just spotty up. He wasn't even their best prospect. It was Talen Horton Tucker among the freshman class, who everybody was watching last year. He was drafted by the Lakers in the second round. And then he goes to the FIBA U19 championships and all of a sudden has the ball in his hands and just blows up. And, you know, I've seen this happen several times where a young player is, again, pops in the projections, and it takes a while for the rest of the world to kind of come around on them. The example I always go back to is, you know, I remember having a conversation near the end of his freshman season. I was consulting at that point for the Indiana Pacers. Like, it would be great if Kawhi Leonard came out in the draft and we could try to target him in the second round or, you know, something like that, because, you know, he was someone that stood out but wasn't yet really on the scouting radar. And in the next year, he becomes Kawhi Leonard, although he didn't go as high in the draft as we all thought he was going to. And so this is a story that happens sometimes. And, you know, Haliburton has ended up kind of not far in the mock drafts from where he is and has always been in my projections. Although, you know, clearly based on the conversations that you're having, there is still a greater degree of skepticism by people that aren't as, you know, is vested, don't invest as much in statistical projections. In addition to what you said, I mean, I think, you know, what stands out, someone who plays an extremely efficient style, you know, particularly his freshman season, where it was a really low usage rate, but high efficiency as a scorer. And, you know, I think what drives a lot of the polarizing nature of his game is that if you're someone who views, okay, if we're going to use a top five pick, we need to have someone who's got the potential to be a conventional star, then yeah, Tyrese Haliburton isn't that player. Even last season when, you know, a lot of those players left Iowa State and he was more the guy, still wasn't a particularly high usage player compared to, you know, Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball and the other players we're talking about in this range. But, you know, I think that sometimes we can undervalue, you know, role players who just elevate your team in terms of, you know, both ends of the court, your floor is dramatically higher. And those guys, when you have the right other talent around them, when you do have those players who are capable of creating their own shots, can be extremely valuable. So that's the role I see for Haliburton, that he's going to be someone who is going to be better on a good team than he is on a weaker team. Really nice complementary piece, particularly, I think, if you have someone who's kind of a ball dominant shooting guard, which isn't really the top of this year's draft. But, you know, I think there are some places he could make sense.
The NBA draft is just days away, and the Locked On NBA podcast is mock drafting every first round pick. I was on the main desk alongside David Locke, Brendan Kleen, and Brad Rowland. We discussed the draft as it was going down. So listen to Locked On NBA every day leading up to the draft to hear projections of each pick, expert analysis from Chad Ford, The Athletic's John Hollinger, and Sports Illustrated's Jeremy Wu. Check the feed to catch up on past shows, and don't miss a pick. Subscribe to Locked On NBA today wherever you get podcasts. And because there's so much content happening across the Locked On Podcast Network, you might need that energy to help you get through the day. And the best way to get that energy to break through, whether it's your mental or physical wall, is Built Go. Built Go comes in easy-to-take 1.5-ounce packages, an energy gel that helps you get through the day with energy that isn't fake, it's natural, and it's long-lasting. Three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. It also has collagen protein, which helps with joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. The stuff not only makes you feel better and helps you with that energy, but helps make you look better as well. Beta-alanine, B3, B6, B12, honey, and caffeine as well. Go to BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Well, that's exactly sort of how I see it as well, that on a good team, he makes sense as a connector piece, a secondary ball handler, because you look at some of his numbers, and I'm not sure how your model takes this into account, but the fact that he got to the free throw line 71 times in almost 60 games is comically low. Like, that is a ridiculously low number for a guy that, if you had him as a primary ball handler, you'd be absolutely frightened that nothing's going to work. So if the Knicks go, you're our starting point guard. If the Pistons go, you're our starting point guard, there's probably going to be some problems there. But if he goes to a team where he plays alongside a guy, he goes to Phoenix and plays alongside Devin Booker, assuming this Chris Paul trade doesn't end up happening, whatever's going on there, it makes more sense, because he doesn't need to be that primary guy with the ball in his hands. And he can work off, and he can create, and he can spot up and shoot. If he has to create everything himself, I think that's where the big worry comes in for me. And it seems like we're fairly aligned on that with him.
Yeah, I just looked this up in my database. Projected free throw rate would be in the bottom 10 of all prospects in my database.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily low. He had over 2 years in college, it was 17%, which is it's unbelievable. Like, if you've got prospects coming in at under 30%, you go, it's a little bit low, but this is even lower than that. The other guy that you're higher on here is Devin Vassell, a player who is, you know, really, really strong shooting pedigree coming out, 42%. Across 2 years in college. We've spoken about him a few times on the show. Opinions seem to vary with him quite a bit. The steal rate was a big increase in his second year as well. We saw his usage rate really stay the same, but the amount of playing time that he got increased, and that's the big reason there. So while Vassell's numbers don't pop, really, apart from the high three-point shooting numbers, what is it about him? And, you know, where are we talking with him? Because he has been, you know, in that 5 to 10 range. I could see him going even as high as 4. I saw someone have a mock draft, had him at number 1. You know, where are you looking at Vassell, and what's popping for him for you?
Yeah, I think similar to Haliburton in that he's not someone you want to put the ball in his hands a whole lot and create his own offense, but as a put him into that 3-and-D role that it seems like every team in the NBA needs, and I think he fits very well. Particularly, you mentioned the steal rate. That's an extremely important thing for prospects. It's tough to say why that is. you know, one of the theories that's out there is that steal rate is kind of it's an indicator of your ability to read plays, and therefore that's something that's translating above and beyond just the steals you generate. But I also think it's probably because of the fact that steals are just really undervalued in terms of what they do to help your team win. I mean, the offensive value that they provide above getting a stop, to me, you know, people who get derided for like playing for steals, gambling for steals, I think that is not a gamble in the sense of, you know, it's something that you're trying to do because despite the fact that on average you're going to end up worse for it, it's actually more like a calculated risk where, you know, you're benefiting from taking those chances. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it. Watching him play, he reminds me a lot of Danny Green, I think. You know, obviously much higher, he's going to go much higher in the draft than Green did, who was a second round pick as a 4-year player out of North Carolina, despite being an important part of a championship team there, as he has been in the NBA. Comparing those two guys, I think Vassell has probably better potential in terms of ball handling. You know, he is comfortable putting the ball on the ground a couple of times, getting to a pull-up jumper when teams close out strong. You know, I think in the NBA, you're probably going to want to encourage him to shoot a sidestep three instead of shooting that pull-up two, because, you know, those have been shown to be more valuable shots. But, you know, I think someone who just, again, comes in, plays a role, fits in, and can help you win.
Now, you mentioned steal rate being important, and Vassell's steal rate last year, 2.8%. I'm just going to throw this year to you now. Someone like Isaac Okoro, who is considered the best defensive perimeter player in this class by many, his steal rate is very, very low. It's under 1.7%. So is that a red flag there?
It's definitely a caution flag, and it's a big reason why Okoro doesn't come out as well in my statistical projections as Vassell does. I mean, he rates as kind of a, based purely on the stats, like an end of the first round, top of the second round guy. When you factor in where he is in the ESPN top 100, that's also a part of my consensus projections, he's at the late lotto, but behind Vassell and a couple of other guards, wing players who are in that mix. Now you can be a valuable defensive player even without getting steals. You know, we've seen that Klay Thompson is sort of the patron saint of this. Avery Bradley is another guy who has never come out particularly well in the all-in-one stats because of his low steal rate, but, you know, has had at times a really positive impact on his team's defense because of his on-ball defense. But generally speaking, I think teams tend to worry too much about on-ball defense and not enough about kind of that team defense and, you know, the opportunities that steals create.
I think the on-ball defense argument is because we see how flash that looks when a guy is going one-on-one against someone, and if you are able to stifle them, then yeah, or you don't get put on a, you know, highlight clip over on SportsCenter, then people go, look at that, he stopped that guy one-on-one. That's great, which is great out in the park, but that's not what NBA basketball is all about. You have to be able to do both of those things, and playmaking defense is something that doesn't get as talked about, I guess, as much in that area. So that is, I've got Vassell ahead of Okoro as well on my draft board because of some of those concerns there too. Now, for guys that you're a little bit lower on, this next guy's interesting. I haven't talked about him with anybody so far on the podcast, and that is Patrick Williams of Florida State, whose name is rising up at the moment. Lots of talk about him being promised to the Pistons at number 7, which I absolutely hate draft promises, but that's apparently where the whispers are with him. A guy that played off the bench for Florida State, 22 minutes a night, 9 points per game. Steal and block numbers are pretty good. You know, a steal and a block per game in 22 bench minutes is not bad. Low volume 3-point shooter, but a good free throw shooter. What is it that you're not liking about him? And at that, you know, potential, you know, let's say 7 to 12 range, where it looks like he's almost definitely going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I said to you that I was lower on him than consensus before we heard about that move up, and I was just thinking of him as, you know, being more in the 9 to 12 range than all the way up to 7. So, yeah, it's only increased. I think, you know, defensively, everything is there for Patrick Williams, as you say, at least from in that element. The one big concern about him defensively is that his defensive rebound rate was exceptionally poor for a combo forward. So if you're thinking of him as someone at his size who can eventually slide down and play power forward for you, or if that might be his ideal role, then that's going to be a challenge because Vassell out-rebounded him from the perimeter last season. So that's, you know, a major concern on defense. But it's really just kind of how raw he is offensively. The shooting isn't there yet. I think teams are projecting that it can get there and that he'll be able to fill that 3-and-D role. You know, I think if you're Anunoby, who's someone who has improved his shooting quite a bit in the NBA thus far. But Anunoby had better, I think, defensive stats coming out of Indiana than Florida State. Than when Williams does coming out of Florida State, he was someone that I liked much higher than consensus in that year's draft.
Williams, I don't know how much this is true, but this is part of my, I guess, theorizing with it, is that people look at Patrick Williams and they go, okay, he's a 6'8", 6'9", wing, you know, power forward type player who put up some interesting defensive numbers, and maybe the shot gets there. Hey, I know someone who was a wing that went to Florida State who had really good defensive numbers and shot may get there, and his name is Jonathan Isaac. Are they the same player? And I think that people will often put those two things together. Well, Isaac did this, and maybe then Williams can become Isaac in the NBA, whereas I don't think they're anywhere near that same level of prospect. Do you think there's a little bit of that similarity of like same position, same school, same raw offense and projectable defense component to it?
I think it's inevitable that those kind of subjective factors go into it. I mean, I know that that's something that happens with me. Even if you watch a guy who has the same number, you know, I think you can start to see some similarity in that regard.
I do it with Paul Reed and Paul Millsap because they're both called Paul.
I mean, definitely with guys who play with the similar positions and went to the same school, I think that happens all the time. That's one of the things that I like about statistical. The comps aren't necessarily great for prospects because of the fact that there's just not that large of a pool. They don't end up that telling, but you know, at least it can strip that kind of completely subjective component over it. I mean, if I compare those two guys, and Isaac is someone else who I was probably higher on than consensus. I think I had him like maybe third on my board that year after Lonzo and Markelle Fultz. And, clearly much too low on Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell, among others. But the big difference is Isaac is much bigger, has grown into someone who now probably could play center. I think he's a legit 7-footer at this point because he's kept growing. I mean, maybe Williams will as well. He's also, you know, particularly young among this year's top prospects, but you can't count on that kind of development. And I think he's more, you know, at best going to end up a 3-4, not a 4-5.
Yeah, I would say that's the case. Yeah, Isaac is minimum 6'11". Yeah, and you're right, pushing to that 7-foot mark. Interesting name you brought up in those past projections from that draft. I was higher on Isaac as well. But Donovan Mitchell ties back to something we talked about earlier. He had a really high steal rate coming out of Louisville, and that was one of those things where there's something interesting with that, and I don't hang my hat on it, but it's like something when you want to look at underrated prospects is that steal rate, and he had a high one there, and it has translated into some pretty good production. Doesn't always work, but an interesting name nonetheless to talk about. Now, this next guy. Now, I don't know where I sort of sit with Williams. Actually, before we go on, then with him, I think he's probably a lottery guy, but I'm not certain. But would you have him out of the top 20? Like, how down are you on him?
I would say I'm not quite that low on Williams. You know, when I was putting together my draft tiers, which are, you know, kind of my subjective takes on people that incorporate these statistical projections, but also, you know, the scouting and everything like that, I put him in the top half of my fifth tier, the 5A tier. So that was like guys 13 through 18, basically, in the draft.
The other guy is someone that we are equally down on, and that is Precious Achiuwa from Memphis, 6'9", center, 21 years of age. And I think nearly everyone that I've spoken to, apart from one person who was a little bit higher on him than most, are a little bit down on Precious. And most of that seems to be his own perception of his offensive talents and role. I think that he's might be a guy without a real position in the NBA who doesn't, you know, necessarily fit in offensively. He averaged 16 points per game. He shot under 60% from the line, which is not a great number. Block numbers are fine. I think there is some defensive talent there, but why or how down are you? Because I've got him in the second round. Are you that low on Precious?
No, I put him in the back half of my fifth tier. So that's basically filling out the end of the first round. I mean, I do think at some point, you know, the defensive potential is strong enough that you have to hope. Like, I can see, I can envision what it is NBA decision makers who see him as a lottery pick or scouts who see him as a lottery pick see, which is, you know, he's switchable defensively, has great feet, can keep up on the perimeter. There was a nice highlight of him blocking a shot on the perimeter, I think on a switch in the grade A mock draft that we posted this week on ESPN.com that I did with our draft experts, Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz. And, you know, then offensively, like, if you can put him in a box where he's just rolling hard to the rim and finishing at or above the rim, like, that works. Like, there's kind of the Montrezl Harrell comparison. And one thing I noted when I wrote about in that tiers piece is, like, Montrezl Harrell wasn't that guy in Louisville. He was also someone who kind of tried to do too much offensively and, you know, it probably worked a little better for him as a more experienced player than it did for Achiuwa as a freshman last year at Memphis in his one season. But, you know, that was, if you would have told me then that Montrezl Harrell was going to be what he is now, it would have been kind of a surprise to me. I wasn't that high on Harrell in the draft. So I get what people are seeing, but I think you're absolutely right in terms of, you know, the other aspects of what he was doing offensively. There's not a lot of touch there. If you get him away from the basket, his shooting percentage drops in a real hurry. Kind of fancied himself a three-point shooter at times. I don't think that's his game at all. You know, as much as we focus on spacing, that if it's not what you're good at, it still shouldn't be what you're doing if you can be effective as a role man and have kind of vertical spacing that way.
Yeah, how he adjusts is going to be really interesting to see how that all works with him on an NBA team. Because if he does make that adjustment, then there is some real potential there. But I think a lot of people are a little bit scared off that he won't be able to adjust, at least not initially. So we'll see how that plays out for Precious in this draft and in the first couple of years of his career. Now, the last couple of guys I want to talk about here, we're talking about a wing player from Louisville, Jordan Wara, a 6'7 small forward, a little bit of an older prospect. He's 22 years of age, but a high percentage three-point shooter, 40% as a junior, almost 8 boards per game, 18 points, a decently high-level scorer who's probably going to go in the second round, but we know that if you can be a wing-size player who can shoot, then teams are going to value that.
So unfortunately, I don't have real strong takes about Jordan Wara. I kind of think it's about right where he is right now. You're correct in terms of the potential as a shooter and a scorer. I think if you're really excited about Jordan Wara, you hope that he can be kind of like what TJ Warren was in the bubble. Or maybe that's an unfair standard because that guy's like a top three pick. Maybe at least TJ Warren the rest of his season in Indiana. I mean, the concern statistically is there's just not a lot else in his game, particularly in the way of defensive stats. And is he going to be more than kind of just a volume scorer? Now, you know, that could still be a useful player if you get kind of a Terrence Ross type, perhaps, in the middle of the second round. That's a really great outcome. But that's why, you know, kind of statistically, I'm not higher on him.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy who does have, yeah, that shooting stands out. But then, yeah, what else? You're right. Like, what else is he doing? And he's never going to have that high usage role that he had in college, where he's 28% over the last 2 years. Like, he's not going to have that level of usage on an NBA team. Yeah, almost definitely. And yeah, the lack of defensive numbers, lack of playmaking. But the three-point shooting, if you can be a consistent three-point shooter, then roles can be pretty easily found for you across the NBA. The other guy I want to talk about is another player who's probably a second-round guy too. It's another wing-size guy, 6'6", Elijah Hughes. An older player again from Syracuse. And on a similar sort of mode, like a three-point shooter, average over 6 three-point attempts per game, not nearly as successful, just 34% shooting there. I've heard some up and down sort of things with Hughes, who some people think it maybe he can stick as a shooter off the bench, or others that just think there's no real hope for him to be an NBA player. He also transferred from East Carolina after his freshman season as well. And the one thing that I guess stands out there is the fact that his assist rate really jumped up between his sophomore and junior season, which makes me a little bit more interested. But overall, I'm not particularly excited with Elijah Hughes.
Yeah, kind of similar feeling to Moore. Like, it could work out. His defensive stats are pretty solid, although we have learned to be kind of wary of guards in the Syracuse 2-3 zone. The defensive stats they put up don't always translate to the NBA. The playmaking is a nice plus. It's really going to come down to, you know, he shot a lot of three-pointers his 2 years at Syracuse, and not enough of them went in for an elite prospect. I mean, it was, you know, 36% shooting. So does that get better? There's some encouraging signs in terms of both the volume and, you know, his free throw percentage was pretty solid at 79% in the 2 years he played at Syracuse, much improved. Between his freshman year at East Carolina, then his after a redshirt year, the sophomore year, and then finally his junior year at Syracuse. So, you know, if he continues that trajectory of development, that could portend good things for him as a shooter, because we do tend to find that free throw percentage is an important part of predicting what your 3-point percentage is going to look like as a pro.
Yeah, so he's made consistent improvements in that as well. You know, going from 68 to 81 in those 3 seasons is a big step forward, and, you know, hopefully that leads to the shooting, you know, continuing to improve, because obviously the willingness to shoot is there, and we just got to hope that for his sake, or forever draft whoever drafts him, that the percentage then follows along with it. But he's probably just a mid second round guy, I'd be guessing, and in real chance that most of those guys don't actually end up working out in the NBA. Kevin, I'm going to let you go there because just as we're recording, there has been an interesting tweet come out saying that Russell Westbrook wants out of Houston. I'm sure you're going to have to go and investigate that and work out what all that means. So we'll see how see what all happens there. But thank you for coming on and talking about some draft prospects with me.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoyed doing it.
And that'll do it for today's podcast. That's going to do it for all of the NBA draft expert shows that we're doing. We're going to do some draft mailbags and some mock drafts, different types of mock drafts leading up to the NBA draft as well. And if anything does happen with this Russell Westbrook situation when the trades open up next week, of course, we'll be covering that as well. Don't forget, subscribe Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.